good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I will be chatting with State Farm Insurance Agent Ray Nierstimer. Ray has been in the insurance industry for 34 years. His agency is located in Libertyville, and we'll be talking insurance all hour. And Ray, thanks so much for being here. Lots to talk about.
Well, Jim, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, I appreciate that. First, what triggered your interest in the insurance business?
Funny story. Really had no interest in the insurance business. took one class in college in insurance. And like most people, probably found it pretty boring. But the need for insurance, my wife had graduated. She was a dental hygienist. She was actually working on a patient, and they were discussing insurance and found out that we did not have health insurance. She made the appointment. Of course, I chew her out for making the appointment with the insurance guy. He comes over and talks to us about insurance, presents the policy, and I simply say, I can't afford that. And he said, well, why don't you come and work for us then? It's free.
You're kidding. Just like that.
Just like that. So my career started as a fluke, actually with Prudential. And I went to work there because I needed health insurance.
I'll be darned. So, see, I was expecting a different story because I see that you were raised in Bloomington.
Right.
And you work now for State Farm.
Right.
And so I thought there was going to be this whole kind of, you know, the tradition that in Bloomington you grew up with that.
But, well,
interesting.
I went into agency or tried to go into agency right out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And the comment was, you have to go out in the world more and kind of get beat up before you come back to be a State Farm agent.
Mm-hmm.
Not many 20-year-olds come out of school and go start their agency career right away.
Okay.
So I did try, but at that point, I wasn't ready. So I got my experience with Prudential instead.
So real quick, and we do need to want to get into car insurance and home and life and all that. But so what kind of experience did you get at Prudential to be able to make you an agent?
Well, you quickly get used to rejection. When you're calling people up and saying, hey, Jim, I'd like to talk to you about your insurance, usually, no, I'm fine. Leave me alone. So you learn persistency. You learn to handle rejection. You deal with people, and you find out just how sensitive insurance can be. When you're talking about a claim or an accident or a death, you better get some experience underneath your belt to handle that.
Well, I tell you what, let's talk about, since you have this 34 years of experience, why don't we get into auto insurance first of all, because that's kind of close to everybody.
It's sure.
Something that everybody has to have. What factors go into the price of car insurance? Quite a few,
I would think.
Because it's pretty expensive for most folks.
It is. It's certainly something that you need. State law says you need to have it.
Right.
But the factors that go into it are the age of the driver, for one.
Mm-hmm.
A 16-year-old is not going to have the same rate as a 32-year-old. The value of the car. If you're insuring a Bentley or a Ford, there's going to be a difference in the price because the Bentley is $300,000 and the Ford may be $30,000. So we have to price that in case that car is totaled out, we're paying out $300,000. So another thing is the territory where the car is housed. If you live in Chicago, you have a much greater opportunity to run into something or something run into you. You live out in the sticks and there's four cars in town, your rate's going to be better because of that.
Okay.
So those are all factors that go into it. I'm sure there's other things, but the driving record. So if you've had a bunch of tickets and accidents, you're not going to pay the same rate as somebody that's not had tickets and accidents.
Okay, let's talk about teen drivers. I kind of went through this with two teens, one a daughter and one a son. And I want to talk about that in just a minute, too, how that varies, the contrast. But first of all, how does my policy change if I had a teen driver? Is it just, it obviously goes automatically up. And is that just because they have more accidents? Is it that simple?
It's just that simple. It's lack of experience. If underwriting an actuary tracks claim activity, a youth will have much more claim activity than a 30-year-old or 40-year-old. It's lack of experience. It's the novelty of I'm I have my first car for the first time, I can do what I want. And that doesn't always include driving slow. That doesn't always include braking. That doesn't always include not checking my cell phone when I'm driving. So just the lack of experience lends itself to having more accidents.
Okay, so let's get into the gender thing. Mm-hmm. Apparently, girls are more safe or less likely to have accidents than boys.
You know,
because at least with the situation I had, right. And this was, you know, 10, 15 years ago now. But, my son's was more expensive than my daughter. And I've seen a pack of girls in a car. That's no great shakes.
No.
So I'm just wondering, is that still the same or is that changing now?
It's still very much the same, although I would say...
Guys are just...
30 years ago, let's go back, 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And... Who drove most of the time to places on dates or out to dinner? It was the boy picking up the girl. They'd go out to dinner. Mm-hmm. So there was more exposure. There's more chance of that. Girls are absolutely driving more now in today's time. They have cars and they do things together and they go as groups. And so I would say that the rate thing is made up of frequency of claims and severity of claims. The girls are definitely catching up to the boys on frequency. So they're having more accidents now.
Hmm.
The boys are still clearly beating the girls out on severity. So instead of...
Still. Even with the texting and everything that's going on.
Absolutely. The boys are still hitting things harder than the girls. So if a girl runs into somebody at 20 miles an hour, the guy seems to be running into things at 30 miles an hour. So they can actually track the severity of the claims, and the boys are absolutely beating the girls as far as severity on
that. So it hasn't changed in 2014?
No.
I would have thought there would be...
hasn't changed in 40 years. I mean, the boys are still... Frequency issue is more close than it used to be.
Okay.
The severity side, the guys are still having more damage when they're in an accident than a girl is.
Does that change as they go to college?
Well, it's going to change sometimes because colleges won't let the cars on campus. Mm-hmm. So my son went to U of I, and they won't let freshmen have cars on campus. Well, obviously that helps. You don't have that kid on campus, maybe in a new area, totally new to him. So the potential would be frequency could easily pick up, severity could easily pick up. So as the kids seem to grow up, the maturity level increases. They see what happens if you do have tickets and accidents. It raises their rates. They're not fond of that, so they tend to start driving a little safer as you get older.
Does the policy change then? I assume the premium would change then too as well?
Yes. If at least with our company, the rule is if your son or daughter goes to school and that school is 100 miles away and they do not take the car with them, it turns into an adult classification rate-wise. So the rate goes down quite substantially.
I've got to ask you, 100 miles.
Yes.
Okay. Any reason it's that number?
I think they just had to pick a number.
Okay.
So, I mean, actuary primarily based in Bloomington. So 100 miles from Bloomington, what schools are included in that? Well, Champaign would be.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt if it's not over 100, the tendency is the kid's going to come back a lot more and drive. So the discount comes into play because it's over 100 miles. They figure you might be back at Thanksgiving, Christmas break, spring break, but less likely to have that car almost every other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So they just picked 100 miles.
So at one point, I just want to stick with this gender thing for a minute. At what point does that change or does it change? For example, now I'm much older.
Right.
And so would somebody who is my same age, would it be a dead heat?
Oh,
now?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. When does that all start to change? When's the shift occur?
Right. The change or the difference between rates of the male and female is much less at age 26. So from 26 to 29, there's a gap, but not near as much.
And 26 is the magic number.
Well, yeah, it is, because it really, at 25, you still see a bit of a gap, and then you've got one more round of minimal difference between 26 and 29. Also, a marriage makes the rates even out. So male and female get married, now it becomes an adult classification.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you're single, you got a higher premium, no matter what the age? Or are we still at the 20s?
No, still in the 20s.
Okay.
Let's say at age 30, whether you're male or female, married or not, you'd be having the same rate. The only difference you may have is a multiple car discount. So if husband and wife have each a car, there's a discount for two cars in that household instead of just one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not to get too social here, but if you're living together, that doesn't count.
No, we have to have them married to get the married discount as well as multiple car discount.
Is there a statute of limitations for that married thing? Like if you get remarried, say at you're single, and then you get remarried, say at age 60.
It's not going to affect the rates as long as you're still getting that multiple car discount.
Okay, so it doesn't matter one way or the other.
No.
Okay. I want to just talk about different cars for a minute. You were talking about Bentleys before.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's pretty excessive.
Right.
But let's take something like, I've got a Honda CR-V.
Right.
Pretty typical, you know, car.
Sure.
Okay, so now I get rid of that and I get a Ford Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are my rates going to go up?
It kind of depends a little bit if you're talking about a 2012 CR-V and now you got a 2014 Ford Mustang.
Well, let's just say the years are similar.
It's going to go a little bit based on the value of the car. But keeping in mind, again, if you total out the CR-V...
So it's not because one's kind of a hotter car, it's because of the value?
Value is the main driver in that thing. They also do testing on crashability and cost to fix. So those factors will be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily, if a lady calls in and says, I'm looking at a 2014 Chevy that's about $30,000 and a 2014 Ford that's about $30,000, those rates are going to be within a few dollars of each other.
Mm, okay. You know, we haven't talked about the policy itself.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of coverage should you have if you have auto insurance? What would be like the minimum that the expectation you would want? Let's go with my Honda CR-V, you know, $20,000 vehicle,
right.
We'll say, you know.
Really, there's a couple different factors involved here. You've got liability insurance. If you hit somebody and they're hurt, they're killed, they're disabled, and they sue you.
Yes.
Really doesn't matter what car you're driving at that point. You could have a 64 Buick or you could have a 2014 Ford.
Good point. Yeah, right.
So the liability insurance, it needs to be where it protects you regardless of the vehicle you're driving. If you've got some assets you're trying to protect, you have to make sure that liability insurance is high enough to protect those assets. So for the car itself, you'll see a lot of times a son or daughter gets their first car and it's kind of this old Buick thing and they don't even put comprehensive insurance or collision on it, but still means they need the liability insurance because they can, like I said, you can hurt somebody just as much or maybe more in an old Buick as a new Ford.
So what kind of liability do you recommend? Is there a ballpark that would have?
Generally, they like to make sure that they're comparing apples to apples. So if somebody calls up and says, I have $100,000 of liability insurance, we'll start quoting it at that same level. And then kind of discuss, is that the right level? Do you need more? Do you have more assets? Is that something you bought 20 years ago that we need to review now and see maybe it should be $250,000 now at this point? So I would say most people want to start with a comparison pretty much to what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you can kind of go through and tweak that to what they actually need.
Okay. Now, we were recently in Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and we rented a car.
Yes.
And the Hertz guy said, do you need any insurance? And I just brazenly said, no, I've got great insurance back home.
Right.
Was I an idiot?
I'm glad you didn't. I'm glad you didn't have a claim.
I just assumed I had great coverage.
Right. In the States, that is true. So I have a car now, and I go to Enterprise, and I rent a car, and they ask if I want their insurance. I'll say no, because I do have liability insurance, I've got comprehensive, collision insurance, so I've got, quote, full coverage. That does not extend down to Mexico. So if your claim would have happened down there, you would have probably had to pay the deductibles that were built into that car. And there's no doubt they have insurance on the car.
Yeah, but I didn't get the extra. They said, do you want the extra for $20?
Right.
Even though here we are in this expensive vacation, I don't want to spend the $20. So
you would have probably been out thousands if you had a claim.
You're kidding me.
No.
So what would I get? Some sort of rider?
Yeah. The policy they're selling you is probably making up for their deductible that they have on the car.
Oh, so when I do travel out of the country, I should get theirs instead of maybe getting something here at home from either Allstate or State Farm or whatever. Well, I'm just asking.
Yeah, we aren't going to sell you anything here to cover you over in Europe.
That's what I was asking. Okay, you have to really go with something there. And I guess this is true of all. Is this true of Canada and?
Canada's a different thing.
Oh, it is.
It will extend over in Canada. Now.
Oh, why is that?
It's just...
Border countries.
It's always been that way. And I don't know if it's just the language issue or if it's rules and regulations. I mean, everybody has different laws that they put into effect. And ours just match up better with Canada than they did down in Mexico.
So we are covered in Canada, or most policies are, but not in Mexico. And get the extra.
Right. Okay. The thing I would always recommend, because there could be exceptions to any rule or anything we're talking about here, but if you're going to be leaving the U.S. and traveling into Canada, go online and find your local company in that area. So you're going to be, if you got Allstate, contact a local Allstate agent. Ask him or her, because they got to have clients going there daily, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be much more familiar with the rules and regulations than somebody in the middle of Illinois.
But if you're going to play it safe, you might as well pay the extra $20 when you're down there and have the coverage.
That's right, because if you have a collision and they have a $2,000 deductible on that car, they're coming to you for the $2,000.
Wow. Learning all sorts of stuff here, Ray. Thanks so much.
Well, that's the idea.
I am talking to State Farm insurance agent Ray Nierstimer. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation regarding auto insurance. But then we're going to delve into home and life insurance as well. You're listening to Word of Mouth, and we'll be back right after this. And that's the Beatles, Baby, You Can Drive My Car. But Ray, probably you better have coverage, right?
Absolutely.
Told you I was the master of cheesy segues.
Yeah, we got it.
Anyway, hey, thank you so much again for coming. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Ray Nierstimer of Libertyville, State Farm agent, insurance agent. That's where his agency is. And we've been talking about car insurance. And we're going to just touch on that a little bit more, and then we'll get into home and life and some of the other things about insurance. Questions that we all probably are thinking in our head. And, you know, one that came to mind, you were just going to touch in over the break, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a good student, you get a discount. And you were saying you were just at a high school recently, and a girl brought up a question. What was that?
The question was, she was just kind of questioning the validity of a good student discount. She said, I know a lot of people that have A's and B's, and they seem to run into cars just as much as somebody with C's and D's. And I said, that's entirely possible. We got such a small classroom here. It was at Libertyville High School. And I said, we're looking at 20, 25 people in this room. So the sampling is pretty small. So 25 to 30 people in a room, yes, you could easily disprove that good student discount. But insurance companies, if nothing else, are just great gatherers of information. So you take that across the country, and instead of now having 20 people, you've got 200,000 good student discounts available. An actuary will sit there and prove it, that an AB student will have less claims than a C and D student. And sometimes it simply doesn't make sense, because everybody knows somebody that's a straight-A student that's running into everything out there. But the sample size is so small. You've got to look at it as large, huge numbers that they can justify a discount for the good student.
You know, there's a lot of interesting questions that come from that. You know, first of all, these actuary guys, they have a lot of power. I want to tell you, so let's say they come up and they say, hey, man, left-handed people, they just don't get into accidents.
Right.
Well, let's give them a discount.
They have an enormous amount of power.
I mean, it can get pretty crazy, and where do you draw the line? But the A and B student, some kids that they just don't excel on tests, and maybe they flourish later.
Sure.
And so, there is a little bit of a bias there.
Well,
quite a bit, actually.
It certainly could be looked at that way, and sometimes it doesn't make sense. But again, over the broad spectrum, with hundreds of thousands of different students involved, they can clearly show that there is a break for the good student. And besides, I'm not sure you want to be the only insurance company out there that doesn't offer it.
Right. You've got to stay competitive.
Yeah. So if XYZ company has it, ABC better have it, or you're not going to write the kids' insurance.
The positive spin on this, though, is it can be a motivator for the kid himself,
right,
instead of the parent. I mean, the student wants to get that, too. So it works both ways.
Very much so.
But the student had a very good point there at Libertyville High School.
It doesn't make sense sometimes. I've seen parents come in as that incentive, say, Jimmy, I'm going to pay the car insurance if you get the good student discount. You're going to pay the difference if you lose the good student discount.
Right.
Now, that could be a pretty substantial chunk of change.
Right, right.
So
it's about $126, I think.
Yeah, it's quite.
Because I use that.
Okay, yeah.
So, I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yeah, now the student is sitting there going, well, wait a minute, this is starting to get real to me. Maybe I should study one more night and do better on the tests to save that.
Right,
because
right.
when you start taking money from somebody, they tend to listen more.
Right, right.
Right.
Okay, so in a way, I guess we're on the theme of things that are unfair, or so, at least according to that one student. Here's another one. So occasionally an individual's rates will go up.
Yes.
And he or she has not filed a claim for the year.
Or maybe multiple years.
Or multiple years, exactly. Right. You're just, dancing around and things are going well, and your claim goes up, and it's kind of like, huh? Why does that occur?
Well, the insurance industry is built under the theory that...
Is this back to the actuaries again?
It's a pooling of risk. So if I have a claim, and let's say I have a $50,000 claim, I'm pretty sure you don't want your rates to go up $50,000. So everybody takes a little increase instead of one person taking a huge increase. It's really the whole basis for insurance is pooling of risk, and everybody's money goes into a pot. And if we need more money in that pot, everybody's rates go up.
Okay, so it's one for all and all for one.
Very much so, yeah. Now, the one that keeps hitting things, though, his increase is going to be more than the guy that doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a profit-loss thing. If a company is not making money, they need to raise the rates. It's about that simple. But the ones having the claims won't get a 3% or 5% increase. They may get a 30 or 40 or 50% rate increase. So they get hit for having those claims, too.
You know, it gets a little bit on the tricky or maybe even preposterous side, though. So let's say I have a fender bender
right
out here after the show.
Right.
And
the police station would be close.
They're next door, yeah.
Right.
So I'm wondering, is it ever advisable not to file a claim? I mean, and people, this is what happens, you know, you might run into somebody and they're going, oh, you know, blah, 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 you know, give me $100 or something.
Right.
And because you don't want your rates to go up.
Right.
And that seems to be, go against what it's all about, isn't it? But anyway, is it ever advisable to not file a claim?
Let's just say,
that scenario.
From the insurance agent's side, I can't sit there and tell you not to file a claim.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you pay your insurance, you certainly are entitled to pay the claim or file the claim. I can say as a parent, as a consumer, I personally have paid claims out of my pocket because I didn't want that accident showing up on my son's record. So he's a fairly new driver.
Mm.
So you're paying high to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a $350 claim. I just didn't want that to start out his driving career. So now he's got the high rates for being a youthful male. He's got the high rates because he ran into something. So we just paid the claim.
If you didn't pay the claim,
yes,
or settle, so to speak, how much would that policy go up, that premium? Because
if I did turn it in?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It depends a little bit on the car. So if I've built up discounts, let's say
I'm trying to find a ceiling here.
Right.
You know, where's this kind of,
right,
you know,
so
wall?
You could lose a discount. So if you've got an accident-free discount and you've just had an accident, well, you're no longer going to get a discount. You just had an accident. But if it's just a base policy, no discounts on there, generally it's a 10% is the first round. So if you're paying $500, next time you're paying $550.
Okay. All right. So it does go up.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
What are some other common auto claim issues that you see? Because that seems to be pretty common.
Yeah. Well, obviously collisions, two cars meet.
Yeah.
Recently, hailstorms, comprehensive claims. You know, a hailstorm comes down and beats up your hood, cracks a windshield. That's all paid underneath comprehensive. So not a collision.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't run into it. It ran into you, basically. And so comprehensive is another windshield break. A rock comes up, breaks the windshield. It's a very, very common claim. Vandalism. Somebody messes up the side of the car. Tows. Towing insurance. So your car breaks down, you have to have it towed to the shop. Well, you can have towing insurance with like AAA, or you can actually get it through your insurance company. So that's another very common claim. Generally $50, $60, $80 to get your car towed somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring in the receipt and we write them a check.
What about uncommon or extraordinary, maybe even weird? Have you ever heard of it? Like you go to these conventions. There
right.
must be some talk where you guys are all sitting around and maybe having a beverage and something comes up.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, some claims that have gone on in my agency. The insured was driving his pickup truck, and the deer jumped in the passenger window and was in the front seat with him. He said the deer
I'm visualizing
this. The deer was not happy.
And but he was.
No.
He was lonely.
He got out of the truck, just left it right there in the middle of the road, and just let the deer do whatever he wanted. But now, you know, you've had deers. I've had deers run into my car. I had a deer.
You have?
I've had a deer.
I've been close, but I've never had the experience.
We were on
very close.
The interstate, and we heard a big bang. I told my wife to, we pulled over, of course. She got out to see what the heck happened on the side of my car, and she said, open up the door. And it's like, it's not locked. She's like, no, open up the door. It's not locked. Well, the deer took the door handle off. It was completely gone. So that was kind of an unusual claim.
Back to this deer that went into the front seat then. Okay, so now he had a passenger.
Right.
And you said the deer wasn't happy.
No, the deer was not happy. He's in a confined area.
How could he tell?
Kicking.
Okay.
Yeah. And you don't necessarily want to get hit by that hoof either.
No.
So.
Yeah.
We also had another deer claim.
So what happened there?
Yeah.
Is that when you see this, it escapes believability.
Oh, absolutely.
Know? Yeah, yeah. So there were, how much damage was done to that particular car?
Window replacement.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's any interior. I kind of forget at this point. This has been a number of years ago, but I'll never forget him saying, I had a passenger. It was a deer. And it's like, what?
Wow.
So, we also had a State Farm office where the deer, it must have been the right time of year, walked by, saw a reflection, and thought, that is a handsome deer, jumped through the window, I think, to try to meet up with itself, and caused all sorts of damage. I mean, he just kind of walked through the office and bled and tore things up.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So, when you see things like that, that's just part of what some claims you take care of, I guess. Huh?
Well, it is. You're dealing with people. People are going to have some odd things happen
to
them.
Right.
It's just part of the deal. It actually is, from my standpoint, kind of refreshing. Not from their standpoint, because I get to hear some weird things that you don't normally have. But
It sounds like the deer was pretty friendly, though. I mean, he was unhappy, but he didn't create any abuse or anything like that.
So. No, not at all. We've actually had a claim where a bear broke into a car. The person left food inside, and the bear did quite a bit of damage. So tore up the seats and the cushions and broke the window and stuff like that. But
And so you're covered with bear, deer, muskrat, whatever happens. You animal coverage, I guess.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked quite a bit about car insurance. Let's move into home insurance.
Okay.
And, you know, that's a very important subject. Why is the coverage on my home always higher than what it's worth?
Well,
I'm always curious about that.
I would be cautious on the word always because
You're right.
When the market
frequently
is, the market is up, and let's go back 10 years ago, the prices of homes are way inflated. I'm buying a house for much more, really, than it's worth, and then the market falls. That doesn't necessarily mean the replacement cost of that home falls. It just means the market value dropped. So if that house blows away tomorrow, completely blows away, we're not going to replace that house based on market value. Here's $200,000. Well, my home's $300,000 to rebuild.
Okay.
So it's completely based on replacement costs, not market value.
This makes sense.
Well, and honestly, the insurance companies have a tremendous advantage over the normal individual on this because they've got so much experience. You can go from the city of Washington, Illinois, that was beat up real bad with that tornado. So now they've got a 1,400 square foot house. They know exactly what it costs to replace that house. Now, it may vary a little bit between Washington and Lake County, but we've got a real good factor in there that we got real fresh examples of what did it cost to replace that 3,000 square foot home.
You know, I'm wondering, what are the steps? God forbid that fire, tornado, any disaster, and then now I'm on the phone with you in the middle of the night.
Right.
What's the process there, the steps? And again, God forbid, but I mean, I'm wondering what would happen and how soon does all this kind of take place?
Right. Well, the first thing we always say is make sure you're in a safe place at this point. And if you had a fire, don't try to go back in and save anything. Just get out of there, seek shelter, call the fire department, whatever. But don't try to be the local hero. We want you safe. And if you can make it a little smaller claim, try to stop the claim from getting worse. So if you have a pipe that is pouring out water, go turn the water off at the main entrance to mitigate that claim from getting bigger. Other than that, there's not much you can do in the middle of the night. Crews will start showing up as soon as they can. We'll call people. They have 24-hour service, too. And we'll try to get a crew out there as soon as possible to board up, to put tarps over the roof, whatever it needs to be to minimize the future loss.
Okay. And so now, I assume then, do I have hotel insurance then with something like that? I mean, in other words, I'm going to have to live in a hotel or somewhere.
Right.
So this is going to be this is a long-term process.
Right.
So now, what happens? I haven't really thought about it before.
Additional living expenses, what we call it. And that coverage has changed over the last few years, too, because we used to say up to 12 months, we'll give you a place to stay while your place is getting fixed. And 95% of the time, that worked out just fine. But throw in a Hurricane Andrew, where you've got 100,000 claims.
Oh, my.
The industry could not get this homes rebuilt in 12 months. So we actually had to change our policy and say 24 months now. You've got additional living expenses to get you back in the home. So now and then a disaster makes us look at our policies and make some changes. And that was a very good example at Miami area just didn't have enough housing to handle these people, and we couldn't get them rebuilt quick enough to get them back in 12 months.
So generally the standard is 12 months if it's an isolated case, but if it's one of these big disasters...
Well, now they're all 24 months.
Oh, it is. It's 24 months across the board.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
I mean, that's reassuring, and I guess that's what insurance is all about, reassurance.
Well, right, absolutely. You know? It's there for the unknown and the unexpected.
You know, we've had a lot of rain lately. I'd just like to talk about flooding for a second.
Okay.
It seems like it's difficult to get flood insurance. Is this just...
95% of the time, unless you're in a flood zone, you're not excited about buying a flood policy.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to pay an extra $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 when the probability of you using that is not much?
So a rider costs that much? I mean, if you want to just get a clause in there.
Well, you're talking flood, though. So that's going to go through the National Flood Program. That's not written by the insurance companies. That's handled directly by the government.
Okay.
And they can be expensive depending on what your flood zone is.
Okay.
So if you live in a flood zone, you're going to be buying a separate policy. The bank is going to make you do that. And it is expensive, yes.
So I did, you know, just personally, I had a rider on mine, and this isn't, you know, I don't want to have a form here, but I'm just kind of curious. And we've had a few, you know, issues with water in our basement, and then we made two claims in 18 months.
Right.
Does State Farm or does the actuary or Allstate or whatever, do they look at that and go, geez, that's no good. We don't want him to have a clause anymore. How does that work with the actuaries? And I'm not really whining so much as I'm just looking for information.
Right. The endorsement you're talking about is
that's like, it. The endorsement, yeah. So all of a sudden, there's no more. They said no more endorsement.
Right.
And by the way, I'm not unique. I've heard this happen to other people as well, particularly with if you live around the Des Plaines River, that type of thing.
It's a sewer and drain backup endorsement. So it's a quote flood policy.
Okay.
But it is for backup of sewer and drains,
which a lot of people experience.
Yeah. The insurance company is very interested in making sure that person has done steps to prevent that from happening in the future. So they'll pay the claim. And then normally it's kind of like, do you have a backup? Do you have a generator? What have you done that this won't be an annual event? Because if we're charging you $200 or $400 and you're having a $4,000 or $8,000 claim every year, yeah, eventually they're going to say, we don't want that anymore. We can't keep you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're costing us much more than we're bringing in. So sometimes it's a matter of we'll keep you, but you have to raise your deductible. Again, the strong incentive there is you're going to find out a way to stop that from happening because you don't want to have a $5,000 deductible. You don't want to pay that money. And then eventually, if they keep having claims, we'll say you can't have that coverage anymore. And it's going to be difficult for that person to shop to another company because they're going to ask the same questions. Do you have any water problems in the basement? Well, yeah, I've had three claims. Well, we don't want you either type thing.
Okay, all right. And it all comes back to that Mr. Actuary guy.
Well, yeah, and sharing information. The insurance companies are very good about sharing information because if you've had 18 claims with XYZ company and you go to ABC and want to quote, they're going to find out about those 18 claims.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Just touch on real quick before another break, renter's insurance.
Yes.
What do you think about that? Now, in my early years when I was renting, didn't have it.
Right.
What are your impressions of that?
Well, claims experience has taught me that for approximately $10 a month, if your neighbor has a fire in the apartment, you basically have a fire.
Mm.
If the guy above you has a fire, you basically had a fire. The guy below you has a fire. In other words, your apartment is not isolated. That apartment building is going to smell like smoke. So I've had a client, this apartment was not affected by the fire or the water, but everything in that apartment had to get cleaned because of the smoke. And it's a major expense to go get everything in your apartment cleaned. So $10 a month? Yeah, I think everybody
should. So it's very cheap.
It's cheap.
Even if I'm the kid out of college and have rummage sale furniture and very little material goods, maybe have an old bike and an old computer, but it's still worth having the renter's insurance.
Well, not only that, what if somebody comes over to your apartment and trips over your tennis shoes and breaks their leg? They're going to come to you and say, you're responsible. So now, where's that money coming from? My medical coverage underneath my renters, my liability insurance underneath my renters, will pay that medical bill for him.
Time to get Mr. Actuary again going there.
Yeah.
I tell you, Ray, this is very informative. If you're just joining us, I am talking to State Farm Insurance Agent Ray Nearsteimer of Libertyville, and you're listening to Word of Mouth. I'm Jim Wunderlich. We'll be back right after this.
Now everything is
That's Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Sounds pretty idyllic. And we're talking to Ray Niersteimer of Libertyville, who's had a lot of experience in the insurance business, actually 34 years. And if you're just joining us, we have been talking about auto insurance, home insurance. And before we get into life insurance, just a real quick thing about the renter's insurance, though.
Yes.
Just to kind of recap, that's something you would definitely encourage then, just because of the fact that if somebody next to you, in an apartment next to you, has a fire, well,
smoke is intense.
Right, right.
It can absolutely move you out of that place for a while. So, yeah, for the cost, I mean, I'm talking about an entry-level renter's insurance being $10 a month. Obviously, if you've got $200,000 worth of stuff, it's not going to be $10 a month. But that person that feels they don't need it probably needs it for $10 a month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's something we don't think about, that's for sure.
Right.
One thing we do think about, and you were indicating at the break that even high school students think about it now, is life insurance. And maybe we can just touch on that for just a second.
Sure.
Or a moment or two. How much life insurance should a person have? What's a ballpark figure? I mean, that's a tough thing to come up with.
Well, it's very individual. I think it's almost impossible to say a blanket amount because we're talking about a single person. We're talking about a married person. We're talking about a married person with children. Those are going to be three totally different answers. The single individual, I would say, let's talk about final expense money. Let's talk about paying off some debts. So you don't want to leave your parents with your debt, or your student loans, your car payment. So take care of your debts, take care of final expenses, and you're fine. You're married now. You've got two kids. Man, if you die, your income stops, but the bills don't. So your children still want food. Your children still want clothing. Your daughter's still going to want to go to prom, even though the income's gone.
College.
And that's all life insurance is at that place, is to, A, pay off expenses, final expenses, and replace your income. And that can be an enormous amount, because you could be talking 10 years, 20 years of replacement of income.
So at that point, that's when you'd want the most life insurance.
I would certainly think so, yes.
So now as you get older...
Yes.
Okay, now what?
Well, quite often you'll see...
A lot of expenses are paid.
Right.
Kids are out of college.
Right. And a lot of times they will reduce the amount of life insurance as they do get older.
Mm-hmm.
So your need as a 30-year-old raising two kids, say $1 million, unless you're talking about estate conservation or estate needs at that point, you're probably not going to have $100,000 at age 80, or $1 million, I'm sorry. So that number can be reduced as time goes on, and the need for it would potentially go down. So it's not one locked-in number. You can't look at somebody that's 16 and say, you ought to buy $1 million policy and keep it forever.
Mm-hmm.
That should be adjusted now and then. That should be reviewed. So if you haven't talked to your agent or your company about your life insurance in the last 5 to 10 years, I'd probably encourage a phone call saying, hey, let's chat. Let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take long.
So as you get older, maybe you would start to think of term insurance versus, say, whole life.
Actually,
kind of, furrowed your brow.
Yeah, well, kind of the opposite. You want your whole life policy to kind of be around your whole life. Whereas term insurance...
So you're not too wild about the term insurance.
Well, I am for the younger person that needs a bulk of insurance, so it's cheaper.
Okay.
So that 30-year-old, if I go to him and say, you need $1 million of insurance, and a permanent policy costs $3,000 a month, he almost has a heart attack right then.
Mm-hmm.
Where if I talk to term insurance, maybe it's $150 a month. So it's affordable. So term insurance absolutely has its place. But unfortunately, when you get older, the term insurance is going to get extremely expensive or even drop off. So you buy a 30-year term policy at age 30. At age 60, you're probably going to drop it because those rates are going to go through the roof.
Mm.
So I'd say term insurance is geared more toward the younger individual and some permanent policy. So when you're 80 or 85 or 90, you've got something to put for final expenses, that
okay.
type of thing.
Okay. Just have time for one or two more questions.
Sure.
And okay, you've been around 34 years doing this.
Yes.
And so in your many years in the insurance business, what's been the most notable change? What have you seen? I mean, you've seen a lot.
I think expectations have changed a lot from their from people. They want instant. I want somebody here yesterday to look at my car. You know, 30 years ago, you had an accident. You were pretty happy to see somebody within a week. That was common.
No kidding.
And now it's like I want to see them right away.
Right.
You know, technology has allowed us to do some things. You can take pictures of your car. And if they're good quality pictures, they can write an estimate right off of that. So it's sped up the claim process quite a bit. Where we don't have to have eyes on everything now because the cameras and technology can be our eyes. So that has helped us. And also because of that is probably increased expectations of why isn't my claim done now? You know, because so it's sped up the entire process. And technology, social media, there's a whole lot of stuff going on and a whole lot more companies than there used to be. So competition's at an all-time high, whereas maybe 30 years ago you had competition from 10 different companies. Well, now you've got competition from 100 companies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really made some changes inside the industry. We've got to be much more lean than we were before.
And it sounds like you have to be pretty quick and rapid and swift because of the technology.
Little
time for reflection. And
Right. But you still have to weigh the side of we got to do it right. We can't get to the point where we're doing it so fast that we're missing 8 things from that car accident. You still have to do a very thorough job and make sure that you're seeing the outside of that car fixed as well as the inside.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say technology in our world has changed just like you here at the radio station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy most about being an insurance agent?
You know, insurance, you give me $400 and I give you a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's not terribly exciting. But when you have a claim or something goes wrong, to be able to help that person get back to where they were before the claim, that's a good feeling. So, you know, you talk about somebody dying, for example. Generally, that's preceded by medical bills, doctor bills, funeral home bills. The insurance agent's the only one bringing money to that table, not anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So we're providing something to that individual at the time of need, whether it be auto insurance, homeowners, life, health. We're providing a service at the time it's needed most.
And it is a good slogan, like a good neighbor, in a sense. I mean,
it works.
There's a lot of truth there.
Yeah, it works.
Ray, thanks so much for being here. I'm sorry we're out of time.
That's okay.
I mean, believe me, there's much more to discuss, but thank you very much.
Not a problem. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
By the way, if you wish to reach State Farm insurance agent Ray Nierstimer, you may go to his website, www.rayniers.com. And thank you for tuning in. I hope you drop by again next Thursday, beginning at 11 a.m., when we talk to another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.